This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the second hour of the Outdoors and Radio Show. We have Matt Sell on from Maryland Department of Natural Resources. He's a brook trout specialist, our brook trout specialist, and we got a lot of stuff to cover, but we've got Bob and John left over from the last hour, so let's talk to John first. Good morning, John. How are you? Thanks for holding. What's up?
Good morning, Alan. I'm very happy to be in the muzzleloader contest.
You are?
And I have a question about... I guess just like rifle champions. I know there's a state pistol champion. Is there such a thing as a state rifle champion?
John, you'll have to let me look into that, and I don't have a moment of time to get in very engaged in a conversation about that, but I will certainly take a look.
I understand, and I'll call back next Saturday. It's in particular muzzleloader state champions that I'm looking at.
Muzzleloader state champion.
I'll do a little research this week, too.
Yeah, that'd be good. There's a couple of muzzleloader clubs that may be able to help you with that. And go on the Associated Gun Clubs, associatedgunclubs.org site, and you might be able to find that because some of those clubs are muzzleloader organizations.
Yeah, I'm doing a little research for my sister, Carlene Burns.
Okay.
She was a state champion.
Oh, good. Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, John.
Have a good day.
See you. Bye-bye. There he goes. And Bob and Jessup, good morning. Thanks for calling, Bob.
Hey, good morning, Alan. Always enjoy your show.
Thank you.
If the government don't get back open, is like the Tucson going to be closed next week, too?
All of them, yep.
That's ridiculous.
Yep. Any federal land is going to be closed.
Yeah. Well,
so
good option, too, then.
Option two.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I've been seeing some good action.
Well, good.
The Bucks are definitely starting to get a little antsy.
I was in a butcher shop the other day, and a guy said, "Look how swollen that buck's neck is already." And I went, "Yeah, I'm ready." So,
hey, I appreciate you letting me get in the contest.
You're there, buddy. You're there.
I'll always listen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Here's what we're going to do with the muzzleloader contest. If you want to call and get in the contest, you still can. Call and give our producer your name and your phone number, and he'll write that down, and you'll be in the contest. We'll waive the condition for going on the air for this hour only, since we're going to be talking to Matt. If you want to ask Matt a specific question about brook trout in Maryland, what I would do would be say, first thing out of your mouth, I want to talk to Matt. I want to talk to Matt. How's that? Well, that's pretty simple, right? And then the producer will know, put you on hold, and signal that you want to talk about brook trout. How's that sound? Matt, you with me?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right. How'd I do there? I mean...
that sounds good to me. You're the boss.
All right, I'm the boss. Oh, man. All right. Brook trout. Everybody knows what a brook trout is, or do they? What is a brook trout, Matt?
Well, brook trout, actually, to get technical about it, isn't actually a trout. They're a char.
Mm-hmm.
There are only native salmonid that we have here in the state of Maryland.
Right. Everything else has been brought in. Those rainbow trout are put and take. The German brown trout were originally introduced and became almost an invasive species.
Exactly.
And now they're highly prized. And then we've got the brook trout.
Yes.
So tell us about our only native trout a little bit. How are we doing on them?
Well, they're not doing well compared to historically, especially less than half of our populations that we originally had in Maryland.
Right.
Are pretty much gone at this point. We historically had fish all the way from the coastal plain, the edge of the fall line, to the far western edge of the state. And now the strongholds for our populations are pretty restricted to Allegheny and Garrett counties.
Right.
We have some fish in the Catoctins around Frederick there. and then the Gunpowder Basin, with a few isolated populations scattered around other than that.
Right.
But that's pretty much where they've been delegated to stay for the time being.
Right. Well, we did find out that the brown trout is pretty tough on brook trout.
Yes. Yeah, for multiple reasons. First and foremost, the predatory reasons. Brown trout get bigger. Brown trout can be very piscivorous, meaning they like to eat fish.
Yep.
And they'll have no problem eating a brook trout breakfast, lunch, and dinner if they can.
I will tell you something real quick. I used to travel the state of Pennsylvania for my work, and my job was to call on bait and tackle stores. I was working for a magazine called Fish Finder at the time. We had a guy in Indiana, Pennsylvania, who had a spring-fed pond, and then the outflow was where he kept his live bait that he sold. So he had his shiners and his minnows in there. And every day he'd go in and he'd scoop the dead ones off the top, and he'd take them up and throw them over the fence in the pond, which was stocked with trout. In the middle of the pond, you could see the big brown trout. They would kind of stay out there by themselves, and these fish were 20 to 24 inches long.
Mm-hmm.
In the next layer, a little closer to the bank, were the rainbows, and these fish were 12, 14, 15 inches. And then along the edges were the brook trout. And they were 10, 11-inch brook trout. I mean, you know, 9, 10, 11 inches. Well, he's throwing these minnows over, and all the trout are coming in. The brook trout are grabbing the minnows. The rainbow trout are grabbing the minnows. And the brook trout the brown trout aren't. The brown trout are just kind of cruising along, do-do-do-do-do, swimming up close to the bank. And you think, oh, there's the big dog. They're waiting for the shiners to come in. And a little brook trout grabbed a minnow, and we flashed and turned around. The brown trout grabbed him in the middle, took him out to the middle of the pond, and in three gulps had that 10-inch brook trout gone down his gullet.
Yes. Yeah, they do enjoy their brook trout meals.
Yes, they do.
And the first part of that story is another reason, another impact that brown trout have on the brookies is that they generally, because of their size and their demeanor, will take the prime habitat as well, which
okay.
make brook trout more susceptible to predation through kingfishers, herons, etc.,
mm-hmm.
Because it forces them away from that better high-quality habitat in the streams and ponds, for that matter. And it makes it a little tougher for them to survive.
Yeah. So anything that has survived is pretty hardy. Let's put it that way.
Either big or hardy.
Big or hardy or both. Yeah. All right. Loss of habitat. What about water quality? Are they a little more susceptible to poorer quality water than the rest of the trouts?
They're susceptible to poor water quality, as most salmonids are.
Right.
They require cold water. They require a little colder water,
mm-hmm.
browns and rainbows,
okay.
Slightly cooler.
We're talking a degree or two here, right?
Yeah, we're talking a degree or two Celsius.
Right.
It's not a lot, but it's definitely there. The flip side of that is brook trout tend to be a bit more pH tolerant on the low end.
Okay.
Than browns or rainbows, they can handle those 6 to 6.5 pH streams much better than browns and rainbows can. Rainbows for reproductions, for instance, they need a higher pH to even be able to reproduce in a stream. And browns are kind of the intergrade in the middle. So these guys, which has helped them a lot with acid deposition and that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
decreasing the pH of a lot of these mountain streams that we have in the Appalachian.
Yeah. We back in the 80s, we heard a lot about acid rain, and we know that some of the mitigation efforts on some of the coal plants and things like that have helped that tremendously, but we still have some, right?
Yes. Yeah, there's still some going on. It has improved greatly since the Clean Air Act, especially. But, there's still some acid deposition going on, and that like I say, that you hate to say that it's a helpful factor, but in some ways, if it keeps that pH down, it's going to prevent browns from invading potential brook trout habitat. So
okay.
The gold lining, maybe, but I'm not advocating poor water quality.
No, of course not. Nobody is. Nobody is. But, you know, there are a lot of folks that specifically like to target those little brook trout because They are unique. There are not that many of them. And, you know, it's more of a specialized thing. These guys like to slip into these little back creeks and so forth and drop a dry fly on them and watch that little 5, 6, 8, 10-inch brook trout come up and smack that thing. And, you know, not much of a fight, but it's, you know, it's the pursuit, I guess, is what drives people back into the mountains like that.
Yes. They're a voracious little fish that typically if you can get a presentation to them without them knowing you're around, they're pretty likely to take it. And the scenery that they live in is
spectacular.
Is that's another big draw, I think, for a lot of anglers, myself included, is that you can get away from people, you can get away from society for a few hours, sneak up into a hollow in the mountains.
Yep.
And just forget about life for a while and catch a couple of brook trout.
Yep, crawl through the mountain laurel on your hands and knees and make your presentation along the edge of the bank and have that fish take your fly, 10 feet from you and do your little battle and release the thing and set him back and catch another one.
That's it. And fortunately, we've done good work here with Maryland DNR to conserve the populations that we have left.
Sure.
And because of that, there's some good, very good brook trout opportunities still here in the state of Maryland for folks.
Sure. Do you have any idea what our state record is?
For brook trout, it is, I want to say it's around a 6-pound fish or so.
That's huge. That's Canada.
Yeah, that's my guess is that's not a wild fish.
I'm guessing not.
Yeah. That's very, very large. Like you say, that's a Canada fish. But we are seeing some very large wild fish starting to show up, specifically in the Savage River watershed, though.
That's cool.
Yeah, really neat stuff.
Yep, that's very neat.
Yep.
For my listeners who've been with me a long, long time, my late wife, Kathy, one of her favorite fishing trips was that mountain trip in the wilds of Pennsylvania, going out and catching those little 5, 6, and 7-inch brook trout.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she just loved it. And she knew where they were because her dad used to do that. And we went a couple times, and she had a blast doing that, and I'll never forget that. So that was pretty cool. And up in Canada, when I was bear hunting, we went back in the wilds of Canada to a beaver pond back in the wilderness somewhere and caught a bunch of little brook trout, too. And that was, I mean, they're just fun to catch.
Yeah.
When you say they're a char, I mean, if you look at the mouth, compared to a rainbow, for example, the mouth is so much wider and bigger. I mean, it looks like they're alligators. You know, those wild fish that with that char look as opposed to the rainbow trout with a little tiny mouth on it. These things for their size are pretty feisty.
Yeah, they, especially you get into those mountain streams. I have a family camp in north central Pennsylvania as well.
Okay.
And my first trout I ever caught, I have a picture holding a brook trout.
Yep.
And we used to laugh. We'd say that they were all head.
All head, yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. Exactly.
You get a 6-inch fish that 2.5 inches of it seemed like it was the head on it.
Exactly right.
Which now I know is an indication of the fact that they're growing slow and it's an old fish that doesn't have a lot of extra food in its diet. So,
Yeah, exactly. Well, Matt, look, I tell you what, when we come back, we're going to talk about how we're trying to protect the brook trout and also want to talk about your telemetry studies a little bit. So we're going to take a short break. And let me tell the folks about Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne. Hunting season's here. And don't forget, they've got the great Coda Bow crossbows and Parker bows, and they can fix your bow. They've got Bowtex on staff and gunsmith services as well. They can get your gun ready to go for hunting season. They can clean it. They can lube it. They can fix it and do whatever you need. That's where I take mine, and Lawrence is a great guy to get a scope mounted or have it bore sighted and that type of thing. So if you want any services like that. And of course, now if you're done fishing for the year, and you shouldn't be, but if you are, a great time for brook trout, by the way, you can get your rods and reels lubed and repaired and taken care of, and then you'll be ready for next fishing season. And don't forget, they're the full-line Browning dealer with all the great firearms from Browning, like the new A5, the X-Bolt firearm, the X-Bolt high-powered rifle, and the BPS pump shotgun. So if you need any firearms, be sure to check out Browning. And with muzzleloader season coming in this coming week, Don't forget to check out the full line of Thompson Center firearms, Thompson Center muzzle loaders, and high-powered rifles, all at Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit number 9. Give them a call, 410-242-6108, 410-242-6108. This is Alan Ellis for Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex are proud to provide outstanding customer service just like their number one rated Linex Spray-On Bedliners with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface and is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands, tools, and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at the local car wash. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex now offer the new Linex Premium that looks better and last longer. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 400 Arundel Corporation Road, just off Beltway Exit 3A. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. And Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did, with a Linex Spray-On Bedliner. W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg is taking care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything. Their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto. Hunters, you could win a $300 gift card from Bass Pro Shops in the statewide Doe Harvest Challenge. You can enter every doe you donate during all deer seasons. Maryland is divided into three regions with 10 chances to win in each region. Just donate your doe through an FHFH deer processor listed in your hunting guide and fill out the entry card. That's it. By donating your doe, you feed the hungry and please local farmers by reducing crop damage. The 2013 Doe Harvest Challenge is sponsored by the Maryland Grain Producers, the Soybean Board, Bass Pro Shops, the Farm Bureau, Farmers and Hunters Feeding the Hungry. For more information, visit FHFH.org.
Stay informed all day on the latest breaking news and stimulating talk.
Listen while you work on AM 680 and WCBM.com.
The most powerful names in news and talk, Fox News and Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Yes! Here comes Amos! Now Amos Moses was a Cajun. He lived by himself in the swamp. He hunted alligator for a living. He just knock him in the head with a stomp. The Louisiana law gonna get you, Amos.
All right. Matt Sell, brook trout specialist, Maryland Department of Natural Resources, Fisheries Service. So how are we trying to protect the brook trout a little bit, Matt?
Well, we're doing a lot of stuff for them. Some of it's directly related to brook trout, some of it indirectly. But there, some of the biggest impacts include habitat loss. That's first and foremost.
Right.
So anything that we're doing to restore riparian buffers, that sort of thing, get rid of derelict ponds that may warm water, a lot of different things like that that directly improve the habitat for them is mm-hmm. first and foremost for
okay.
us. The other thing we're doing too is in places like the Savage River watershed, we have special regulations in place, including the zero creel. To protect the stronghold for brookies here
right.
in Maryland as well.
Sure.
So,
do you have a core of volunteers that help you out as far as the stream stuff is concerned?
Yeah, we work collaboratively with a lot of folks.
Mm-hmm.
We work with the University of Maryland folks here at the Appalachian Lab a little bit.
Sure.
And
sounds like a good plan to get some Frostburg students out there and doing some work.
Yes, actually, a current Frostburg student who was also a Garrett College student helped us out this past summer as our intern. Helped us out with a lot of our monitoring efforts and doing some of the research that we were doing, including the telemetry work that you
mm-hmm.
mentioned before.
Okay.
Also, you know, we've worked a lot with Bureau of Mines, local watershed groups, advocacy groups like the Yawk River Watershed Association. Savage River watershed folks, and like I said before, Garrett College helps out whenever they can. Frostburg State, yeah, there's no shortage of volunteers, especially when you start talking brook trout. That's just it's a cool thing to do.
A number of years ago, in Washington, there was an event held, and I'm not sure who sponsored it, but It was a compilation of all the fisheries programs from the Mid-Atlantic region, and I think the program was called the Brook Trout Initiative. Am I correct on that, or some overwhelming, overarching program that that was talking about considering brook trout in the Mid-Atlantic region? Is that still going, or am I off base on that a little bit? Because there was somebody there that had brook trout, and might have been you. But we were on the banks of Potomac in one of the parks down there in Washington, and you know Johnny Morris from Bass Pro Shop was supposed to show up. I can't remember who the group was that put the thing on. It might have been Fish America or one of those groups. But we were all gathered together there at one point. Was that?
That was before my time.
Okay. All right.
Start with fisheries here until 2009.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was. This was back in probably 2004, 5, somewhere in there.
Okay. Okay. Well, one group right now, an overarching group, since you mentioned those, is the Eastern Brook Trout Joint Venture.
That's the one.
Okay. It's a consortium of both local, state, federal governments, as well as NGOs and not-for-profit organizations.
Right.
Eastern Brook Trout Conservation at the core of their mission.
That's the one. Yep. Exactly. So, and you're part of that?
Yes. Yeah, we're active members of the Eastern Brook Trout Joint Venture, and we attend the meetings whenever possible and do whatever we can.
Okay. Very good. Tell me, since you've instituted the Zero Creel and some of these management things, are you seeing any improvement?
Yeah. We're seeing a lot of nice fish now.
Okay.
Since we implemented the regs. There's definitely a lot more of those 8, 9, 10-plus-inch fish showing up
in our
monitoring, and the numbers of fish seem to be increasing as well. So it looks like it's doing its job.
That's a good thing.
The one thing that's been difficult, though, is that for the first couple years after the regulation was enacted, we had virtually no recruitment because we had a series of extremely dry summers.
Right.
Which is very harmful to brook trout because of low, warm water.
Right.
Additionally, we had some pretty epic spring flooding,
mm-hmm.
which if the brook trout fry are either still in the interstitial spaces, just hatched out, or if they're still embryos in the reds,
Whoa. In those last two sentences, you said about 10 words that I and my listeners don't understand.
Okay.
So back that up just a bit and dumb it down for us.
Okay. I'll basically, whenever brook trout go out and spawn in the fall,
yep.
They'll lay their eggs that are
yep.
fertilized externally
right.
in the red.
Okay. That's a red is the nest, right?
A red is the nest.
Okay.
And there'll be a little bit of protection in the fall,
right.
Both male and female. The female will typically stick around a little longer.
And the angling pressure is off.
The angling pressure is off. Typically, there aren't as many people out, you know, walking across the reds and all.
Okay.
And then these eggs will sit there, and they'll develop over the winter months. And then typically around early March, come springtime, it varies based on where you're at geographically.
Right.
But those little guys will basically hatch out.
Yep.
And they'll stay in and near that red.
Without much protection.
Without really any protection other than hiding in the cracks around the rocks.
Okay.
And if you get big spring floods where you have a lot of bed load moving, you basically just grind them up. And they get killed that way.
So you're saying that they're hiding in the gravel, and the high current is crushing them in the gravel.
Yes. Or if they've we call them swim up fry.
Yep.
Once they swim up out of there and they're in the water column.
Yep.
You get those higher spring flows. What it does is it either just washes them downstream.
Yep.
Or it forces them out into the floodplain. And they get stranded, and the result's the same no matter what.
There's no brook trout, right?
Yeah, exactly. So because of those environmental factors, we had some pretty poor recruitment for the first few years after the reg. But now, the last couple years, fortunately, we've had some milder winters,
right.
And none of those giant spring floods. And this past summer has been a tremendous water year for us, with lots of water and you know cool water.
Good.
So. We're seeing some really good recruitment out of our populations,
mm-hmm.
and we're really optimistic that the results of the regs are really going to be emphasized here in the next couple of years.
That's good news. Hold tight. We're going to talk about telemetry and the studies you've done on that when we come back, and how you how you conducted those studies. So,
sure thing.
All right. Alan Ellis here for Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne is the address, just off Beltway exit number 9. Clyde's has been around since the late 50s, 57, I believe. Over the years, they've developed a tremendous reputation for honesty and integrity, fair value, fair prices, and they have the selection that they need to maintain that. In other words, if you need something, they can order it, they can get it, or they can try to get it for you until, you know, and they'll work, do everything they possibly can. For example, Leupold scopes, Nikon scopes, Thompson Center muzzle loading firearms and high powered rifles. They're a full line Browning dealer and have been for a long, long time. They carry all the Browning models. They carry some Remingtons and some Savages and some H&Rs and some other firearms as well. And they specialize in nothing. What I mean by that is, if you need it, they've got it. They're not a little narrow, tiny store. If you need something for fishing, they've got it, from brook trout to striped bass in the bay. They have developed a reputation in Maryland and in Baltimore as one of the most friendly and well-stocked and well-supplied sporting goods stores you can find anywhere, and you owe it to yourself to go visit the store. They do sell hunting and fishing licenses, of course, archery, firearms, I mean, I can't say any more. And they have the full service to back it up. They'll do everything they can to help you and to keep you satisfied and happy. So, Clyde Sports Shop, friends of mine for nearly 30 years. 410-242-6108. The website is clydesports.com.
Areas of light rain and drizzle are going to continue as that area of low pressure continues to sit off of the Delmarva Peninsula, keeping the shower chances in the forecast for us. 65 today with showers possible. Rain continues tonight, 59. Few showers tomorrow, a high 67. Richard Wedding at the Weather Channel for Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
This is the Wall Street Journal Report. I'm Marcy Norton. In these days of Twitter and online banking, you need to make sure you include your digital assets in your estate plan. A popular blog or web domain, for example, can have value as a business. But if the owner doesn't take the proper legal steps, their heirs may lose the rights to those assets. Photos, videos, email, and contents of social media accounts also may be lost. When planning your estate, make a list of your photo and social media accounts, web-based games, and online-only banking and brokerage accounts. Then establish procedures for protecting and granting access to passwords and for transferring assets and account ownership. The rules can vary widely depending on the vendor. Wills play an important role, too. You should state who should receive any digital property that is capable of being inherited. But estate advisors caution against listing digital assets and passwords in a will because the will can become public. Such information instead should go into a separate letter. This is the Wall Street Journal Report.
So, you're leaving that great barbecue joint in the warehouse district and you're about to get into your truck. Except, there is no truck. Holy cow, it hits you. Your keys are missing and your Silverado's been stolen. And before you go crazy over the injustice of it all, you tap your OnStar app. A soothing woman says, no problem. And before you can say, that thief's going down, she helps you file a police report. Then she pings a signal that bounces into space, giving her the lat and long of your truck, which she shares with the police until the joyrider is in their sights. When the officer gives the go-ahead, OnStar sends a signal that slows his speed, just as the thief is saying, what the? And it's hard to say who is more amazed by the whiz-bang, don't you dare mess with my truck technology, you or the guy who's about to do hard time, all because you drive a Chevrolet Silverado, connected by OnStar. Find new roads. For details, availability, and system limitations, visit OnStar.com.
Alan Ellis here for Hammer Hollow Outfitters. Looking for a place to hunt for quality deer or waterfowl? Hammer Hollow Outfitters has thousands of acres spread over 9 farms on Maryland's eastern shore. Brian Doyle and Ken Kirchner are dedicated to your success and your safety. Hammer Hollow has proven blinds for ducks and geese, and their farms produce big bucks year after year. Your chances are good for a fair chase, mature whitetail. Visit their website, HammerHollowOutfitters.com, or call 410-903-2872. Hammer Hollow Outfitters, 410-903-2872. 410-903-2872 for geese, ducks, and quality bucks.
Don't be fooled by cheap crab prices. That's bull stuff. NBS Seafood offers only Maryland live crabs, a little more expensive, but well worth it. Avoid the pre-steamed, mushy, flavorless crab scandal. Get your live Maryland crabs at NBS Seafood. Maryland watermen supply the best local crabs caught today for you to enjoy tonight. Cook your own crabs to unlock that special flavor that Maryland blues are famous for. Just 20 minutes in your steamer, so good your taste buds scream. We even have a crab spice for you. Call NBS Seafood at 410-271-3202. NBS Seafood has fresh Maryland crab meat, live Maine lobsters, live crawfish, wild-caught Gulf shrimp, and many fresh and flash frozen delights. And they shed their own soft crabs in their own tanks for the cleanest, freshest soft crabs anywhere. NBS Seafood has a roadside stand at 1223 Dorsey Road in Glen Burnie, next to Jim Donnie's RV. Open 7 days, Monday through Friday, 2:30 to 6:30, Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 6:30. That phone number, 410-271-3202. 271-3202 for live crabs, NBS Seafood. No bull stuff sold here.
Hey, soft crabs are about done, but NBS now has not only Chincoteague, but local fresh oysters, too.
This is Alan Ellis for Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex are proud to provide outstanding customer service just like their number one rated Linex Spray-On Bedliners with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface and is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands, tools, and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at the local car wash. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex now offer the new Linex Premium that looks better and lasts longer. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 400 Arundel Corporation Road, just off Beltway Exit 3A. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. And Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Protect your investment, your pickup truck like I did, with a Linex Spray-On Bedliner.
The Doe Harvest Challenge is now statewide. Deer hunters, by donating your female deer, you feed the hungry and please local farmers by reducing crop damage. Now you could win a $300 gift card from Bass Pro Shops. Maryland is divided into three regions with 10 chances to win in each region. Just donate your doe through an FHFH deer processor listed in your hunting guide and fill out the entry card. That's it. You can enter every doe you donate during all deer seasons. The 2013 Doe Harvest Challenge is sponsored by the Maryland Grain Producers, the Soybean Board, Bass Pro Shops, the Farm Bureau, and Farmers and Hunters Feeding the Hungry. For more information, visit FHFH.org.
How high's the water, mama? 2 feet high and rising. How high's the water, papa? She said it's 2 feet high and rising. Well, we can make it to the road in a homemade boat, 'cause that's the only thing we got left that'll float. It's already over all the wheat and oats. 2 feet high and rising. How high's the water, mama? 3 feet high and rising. How high's the water, papa? She said it's 3 feet high and rising. Well, the hives are gone, I lost my bees. Chickens are sleeping in the willow trees. Cows in water up past her knees. 3 feet high and rising.
A little Johnny Cash there for those of you who are waterlogged out there in the state of Maryland. I'll tell you, we got some rain the last couple of days. How about up your way, Matt?
Yeah, it hasn't stopped. I think my gauge has around 2 inches in it at this point.
Oh, I talked to a friend yesterday, midday, in the middle of a deluge, and he had 6 1/4 inches in northern Carroll County.
Ouch.
Yeah, and I was coming down through the county, and the streams were over the banks. The farm fields were flooded. I mean, thank God there were no brook trout in there.
Yeah, that's bad news for them. Good news for the duck guys out there.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. That's for sure. All right, this is the one I've been waiting for. How do you conduct a telemetry study on brook trout? What do you do?
Okay. Well, the first part is collecting the brook trout, and that was the coolest part of the job. I got some of the regional folks come out with me, and their fishing expertise, and caught me some fish.
Hook and line?
Hook and line, yes.
Wow, okay, cool.
Yeah, that was a cool deal. The reason we decided to go that route was because we tried electrofishing.
Yeah.
And when the water's higher in the wintertime and it's colder, these brook trout are in the deeper pools down low, and the electrofishing gear just wasn't, it really wasn't adequate to
right.
get the fish. So I said, well, let's give it a try, because these fish are active, they're feeding.
Right.
And fortunately, we got a little bit of a nice weather February in 2012. And in fact, there were some good hatches coming off, and these fish were taking dry flies. So let's see if we can maybe hook and line. And
okay.
It didn't take any time at all for us to collect the fish that I needed for tagging.
Wow.
So it worked out really well for us. And basically what we did is we collected these fish, and I did a little surgery on them. My mom said she never knew she raised a doctor.
Yeah. Well, you open it. You open up the belly and you insert the little radio tracker, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's a real small tag, just roughly maybe a half inch incision.
Yep.
And you slide the tag inside, throw a couple sutures on there, let them recover, and put them back out, and start to track.
Okay.
And that's where the fun stuff started to happen. See, what we knew was that there were these large brook trout in the lower portions of the main stem's upper Savage River,
mm-hmm.
and anglers were catching them, and some anglers were reporting to our regional folks that not only were they catching them, they were preferentially harvesting these fish,
right?
Because they were nicer than the rainbows that were being stocked in the put-and-take area.
Okay.
So that obviously piqued our interest, and...
yeah.
We wanted to see what these fish were doing, because they weren't showing up like that in any kind of numbers in our summer surveys.
Okay.
So we assumed they were moving. We just didn't know where or when or mm-hmm. how far. So we put these tags in and started the track. And what we found out was these fish are not only highly mobile, but they're migratory as well. They're leaving and then coming back. So
where are they going?
Right now, from the fish that I have had tagged, and now the study is over, the tag batteries have run out.
Right.
Those fish predominantly moved into tributaries or
okay.
the very upper reaches of the main stem. What was happening?
So they swim upstream.
Yeah, all of them
and
went
migrate.
Upstream. None of them went downstream. All of them went up.
Okay.
And they were looking for cold water. Is
how,
what it was.
How far?
On average, about 6 kilometers. So 6,000 meters.
4 miles?
Yeah, roughly about that. With farthest moved fish went a little bit over 11 kilometers.
Wow.
So, yeah, you're looking at a fish that swam, what is that, roughly 7 miles?
7 miles, 7 to 8 miles. Wow,
yeah.
That is amazing.
Yep. The more amazing part, though, is those fish went there. They stayed there, which
yeah.
was another kind of eureka moment for us. We didn't know what they'd do come spawning time.
Right.
And I actually saw a few of my tagged fish working reds and actively spawning where they spent the summer. Then right after they finished spawning, they moved back to the same pool, the same root wad that they were tagged from.
Same what?
And whether it was a root wad or a pool.
Okay, what's a root wad?
Yeah, whatever hole we caught them out of.
Ah, that there you go.
There we go, yeah. There we go.
Yeah.
I'm used to talking to
like
biologists.
Like a biologist.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah. So they're I'd say they have high sight fidelity.
Yeah.
But we'll just call them homebodies. At this
okay.
point.
I like that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Matt.
Yep, no problem at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, really, really, really interesting that not only are they spawning up there, but then whenever they came right back to where they came from.
Right.
What's even more interesting is we got lucky this summer in one of our monitoring stations. We collected a fish that I had marked as being tagged,
right.
And we were able to get a reading off of it using the telemetry receiver.
Right.
And that fish moved from the main stem to that pool in 2012, which was in the Little Savage River, is where he spent the summer.
Right.
I watched it spawn there in October of 2012.
Right.
In November of 2012, I found it back in the same hole in the Savage River, about 4.5 kilometers back downstream. It spent the winter there. And this summer, it was in the same pool in the Little Savage whenever we collected it in our surveys. So they're doing this year after year.
They have established a pattern. They know what they're doing. And, you know, nature never ceases to amaze me. Always did from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, and it just, you know, who came up with this plan? It wasn't from the mind of man, and that's what I have to impress on people. You know, you can't look at a blade of grass and say, you know, we built that, because nobody ever did.
Yeah.
You know, or the structure of a flower, or the spawning patterns of a fish, or the migratory traffic, you know, the migratory brain of a bird. It you know.
Yeah, it's there's something guiding all that, and it's pretty impressive.
It is extremely impressive. It's actually, and I'm not overusing this word because I don't use it in conversation, but that part truly to me is awesome.
Yes.
Worthy of awe.
It is.
Yes, indeed. Not awesome, dude, but awesome. So,
yep. Awe-inspiring.
Awe-inspiring, exactly right. So, okay, now we know this stuff, and, you know, interesting information. How does that affect management then? What does that tell us? Well, how do we help them?
Well, at this point, we still have a few more questions to answer.
Okay.
And that's the great thing about research is it typically raises more questions.
Sure.
Answers the questions we had to start with.
Right.
And at this point, because these fish are spawning in the tributary,
yep,
it brings in the genetic component to all this. And are these fish acting as a population of fluvial or river-based fish that actively look for each other in the tributaries when they spawn and only spawn with themselves, or are they acting as part of an overall savage river population? And whether it's one way or the other, these larger fish, these fish are up to 14-plus inches.
Wow.
And they're the biggest fish in the system.
So the question is, do they spawn with the same partner year after year after year and look for that same genetic population, or do they intermingle with the greater population that is supplemented by stocked fish?
Yes.
And okay.
They don't really intermingle. We don't stock brook trout there.
Okay.
We don't stock brook trout anywhere.
So it's all natural recruitment.
Yeah, this is all natural reproduction. These are all native wild fish.
Okay, cool.
Yep. And these large fish tend to contribute more, disproportionately more, to a given year spawning effort.
Yep.
So they could be very, very important to sustaining the population as a whole, because they could be, typically these larger females are going to produce more eggs.
Gotcha.
So we have genetic samples taken from fish in each of the tributaries as well as the main stem,
mm-hmm,
and we hope to be able to answer these questions here in the very near future.
Oh, that'll be cool. All right, yeah. Here's the deal. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about angling pressure, and then we want to let our listeners know where they can go for more information. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
All right, hang on there. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you. Buck Bomb introduces new products that will attract deer and improve your odds. The new Ambush all-season deer scent comes in a larger can that gives you 33% more Buck Bomb for the same low price. Use it on every hunt. The Cornholer is a corn-based attractant that screws into the ground. Deer have to paw and gnaw to get it. That brings them back time after time. Now, Pathfinder is an invisible spray, except for your flashlight, that you spray on trees to mark your trail into your stand. You can't see it in the daylight, so no one else can find your favorite spot except you. It lasts for months until it slowly fades away. And fishermen, you can try the new Fish Bomb Menhaden Quick Slick from the makers of Buck Bomb. Visit your local Buck Bomb retailer or order online at buckbomb.com or call 1-866-850-6653. The Buck Bomb blows away traditional scent products. Hunt smart. Increase your odds with the Buck Bomb.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
Now, the most powerful news, talk, and information team in Baltimore is right here.
Fox News, along with the Weather Channel,
delivers the information you need. Plus, hear the hot topics and issues of the day only on Talk Radio 680 WCBM
and WCBM.com.
Take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get about all day, but don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones, and mighty fine for skipping stones. You feel fresh as a lemonade sitting in the shade.
All right, the fishing hole. Of course, you don't fish for brook trout quite like that, sitting in the shade, do you? Matt? Are you with me, Matt?
Yes, sir.
All right, you don't fish for brook trout sitting in the shade and skipping stones, do you?
Not too often.
Not too often, that's for sure. And by the way, listeners, I'm going to be using the ambush buck bomb this coming week during the early muzzleloader season. I'll also be using... A buddy's creation out of Southern Maryland called Dead Deer Walking as a cover scent. Good stuff. So anyway, just in case you're out there listening. Are you a deer hunter, Matt?
Oh, yes, sir.
You ought to be if you live up in Western Maryland, that's for sure. So, all right, angling pressure on brook trout, and where can we learn more?
Okay, angling pressure, it varies a lot.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem to be as high as what the pressure is on our put-and-take management areas,
right,
where we have our stockfish.
Right.
But the folks that do it, there tends to be a bit of almost a cult following.
Mm-hmm.
Folks who like their brook trout really like their brook trout.
Right.
And typically, folks have predominantly, at least in my experience, have been catch and release. Some folks do like to take them home for the frying pan.
Sure.
In areas where they're open to harvest, that's A-OK.
They need to go up the road and get some walleyes and leave the brook trout alone.
Oh, that's everybody asks me if I can fish. I said only if it's a walleye.
A walleye.
A perch.
Right.
Exactly. Thank goodness deep creek's in my backyard.
Yeah, but the mortality with bait is pretty tough. They are big mouth fish, and they tend to swallow the bait with a high mortality rate, right?
Yeah, typically. Because they're so voracious in their feeding,
yeah.
They'll take bait presentations very, very well.
Yep.
And the literature says that you can expect anywhere from 25 to 100% mortality of, you know, post-release mortality,
right,
of bait-hooked fish.
And that's why we have artificial lures, catch-and-release-only type of deals.
Yeah, that's why that regulation was enacted in the Savage, is to protect against that kind of mortality.
And my recommendation is always use smaller hooks than you ever thought possible, and bend the barb down.
Yeah, those are two great things to do. And another thing is, it's been coming out more recently, I guess just coming to light more than really being something new and innovative, but it's actively fishing your bait, fishing it with a tight line rather,
yes,
than feel the bump, let them have it, then set the hook.
Yeah.
When you feel the bump, set the hook, and
yep,
you may miss a fish here or there, but you're going to save a lot more fish in the long run.
Catch them in the lip rather than in the gullet.
Exactly. And that's a lot of folks don't realize, too, just how close vital organs are to the back of the throat,
yep,
on a trout. And those hooks that get buried in the gills, in the gill arches, or in that meaty area that we call the throat,
yep,
can actually be puncturing some vital organs, too.
Yep.
So, bad news for the fish.
Bad news for the fish. Exactly right.
Yep.
Matt, we're almost out of time. Where can we learn more?
Well, you can go to our fisheries website,
mm-hmm,
online. And
that's www.dnr.maryland.gov.
Yes, and there should be a tab at the top that says fishing or fisheries.
Fisheries, right.
Yes, and click on that, and there's going to be links there to, like, our Fish Facts page.
Yep.
We have some information about brook trout there, as well as there should be a link there going to our fisheries management plan for brook trout as well.
Okay.
So you can get a feel for what our strategy is and what we're trying to do and how we're trying to conserve the fish, but also enhance our recreational fishing opportunity for anglers as well.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Matt, I'll tell you what, you've been very informative to us this morning. We've got a lot of questions answered, and if anybody gets out there to Western Maryland, any of our trout anglers that are in the audience and like to fish for a challenging fish, the brook trout is the one. And, you know, you're talking 10, 12, 14-inch brook trout. Those are trophies in anybody's book here in Maryland. Of course, you get into, you know, Canada, you want to get that 5-6 pound fish, but that is a tremendous fishery out there in the Savage and other areas of Western Maryland. And we'll check out the website www.dnr.maryland.gov. And Matt, we just can't thank you enough for being with us today, and appreciate all the information. And we know you're out there, so good luck on Thursday if you happen to get out for muzzleloader season.
I thank you for that, and I appreciate the opportunity.
All right, Matt. You have a great day.
All right, you do the same now, Alan.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
Yep, no problem. We'll see you.
See you later. And there goes Matt Sell, the brook trout specialist from Maryland Department of Natural Resources Fisheries Service. And we want to thank you for listening today. If you were calling in during the show to get into muzzleloader contest, you're certainly welcome to do that. And we will be giving that muzzleloader away the last Saturday of this month. So you'll have another couple opportunities to call in and get in on the contest. And by the way, if you have called in and we've got your name and you are online and you like Facebook, go to our Facebook page, The Outdoorsman Radio Show. Leave a comment there, and we'll check and make sure that, and like us, of course, and leave a comment if you'd like, and you get a preference point, which means you get two entries into the contest for liking us on our Facebook page. So we recommend that you do that. And Maryland Hunting Quarterly has also has a Facebook page. Maryland Loves Crabs. And even Ellis Outdoors LLC has a Facebook page. So we invite you to, you know, if you like the social media, we have a social media coordinator, Laura Rigsby, and she takes care of all that for us. So if you're into that, you may hear from me, you may not hear from me, but Laura takes care of that and does a good job with it. So on the internet, if you want to listen to the podcast or the radio show, you can listen on ellisoutdoors.com or wcbm.com. You can go back as far as a couple of years on ellisoutdoors.com. Hit the Outdoorsman Radio Show button. It'll take you right to the radio show site. You learn about me. And now get out, and stay safe.
$300 gift card from Bass Pro Shops in the statewide Doe Harvest Challenge. You can enter every doe you donate during all deer seasons. Maryland is divided into three regions with 10 chances to win in each region.